Hey folks, before we get started, I want to let you know about our sponsor, Gainswave. You may have seen some of my recent posts on this company and the results I've experienced. If you're not familiar with Gainswave, it's a safe, comfortable treatment for men to optimize sexual performance and to reverse the effects of erectile dysfunction due to lower blood flow. Gainswave utilizes high-frequency, low-intensity sound waves to improve blood flow to the penis, remove microplaque, and stimulate the growth of new blood vessels. I personally didn't have any issues in that department, but what initially excited me about Gainswave was listening to Dave Asprey's book, Game Changers, and how it took his sexual performance to a whole other level. Then I saw Ben Greenfield's results, and it put me over the edge. By the way, check out his blog posts on it if you haven't, because they're really informative and they're actually hilarious. I've gotten all 6 treatments, and I can tell you I'm a different man. I'm not joking. This has made a real positive impact on my performance. My confidence has gone up, and of course, my relationship with Maura. If you want to learn more, check out gainswave.com/fat. You'll be able to search for providers in your area and even get a free session. That's gainswave.com/fat. And now, on to the show.
Welcome to the Fat Fuel Family Podcast, where every week Danny and Maura Vega discuss topics that help families live a healthy and active lifestyle with their little ones, including nutrition and training, peaceful parenting, education, and mindset. To stay up to date, make sure to hit subscribe on this podcast and check out the blog at www.fatfuel.family. You can also find them on Facebook and Instagram at dannyvega.ms, at fatfueledmom, and at fatfueledkids, and Fat Fueled Family on YouTube. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Fat Fueled Family Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Vega, and I'm joined by my lovely wife, Maura. How are you, my love?
I'm good again.
I feel like we just recorded, so.
That's okay.
So we are very excited. We have a guest on who we recently found out. We've been friends with him and his wife for a while, but we found out that we have way more in common than we previously knew, so we're super excited. Greg Emmerich graduated in electrical engineering and has always had a systems approach to his work. He's also an international best-selling author. He followed his wife, Maria, into the nutrition field and has since dedicated his time researching and looking at nutrition and biology from a systems perspective. Over the last 10-plus years, he has worked with hundreds of clients alongside Maria to help them heal their bodies and lose weight, leveraging their biology and a ketogenic lifestyle to make it easy. Welcome to the show, Craig Emmerich. How's it going, man?
Good. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, we're excited to talk to you, man.
Thanks for coming on.
Especially because we have so many similar interests.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We talked for quite a bit at KetoCon at one of the meals, and yeah, we have a lot in common. We have a lot of common beliefs and interests for sure.
It's always good to find people like in the same, you know, mindset as you, especially like it would have been awesome if you guys lived closer because you know how it is when you have like we should just make an excuse when they're in Malibu, just like crash. Like, or is it Malibu or where is it in Hawaii?
I think their house is in Malibu.
It's
Maui. Yeah, we spend some time in winter in Maui, but we live right now in Wisconsin.
Right.
We spend the summers here.
Right. I don't blame you, man. Wisconsin summers are a lot better than Tampa and I'm sure even Maui.
Yeah. Well, and summer or winters in Maui are much better than winters in Wisconsin.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the big one right there.
Yeah. But we also just you know, when you're around people who have the same like kind of views, especially when you're with your kids, like you lose this background, you know, anxiety that you have that if something goes wrong, that you're going to have to step in just because you don't want to look like a bad parent. But when you're on the same page, you everybody's kind of like, well, they'll figure it out. You know, I love that.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Well, we always lead off with the question, what is the most critical problem you're currently trying to solve?
You know, I could take the easy route and say that finding enough time with
right. Yeah. That's a good
one. We've heard that one a lot. Yeah.
And all that. But, you know, I think recently Marie and I have really taken on putting more effort into dispelling some of the myths in the keto community. Cause there are some you know, bad information that's out there that just isn't going to be helping people to heal and really realize their best health with keto.
Yeah.
And so we've been trying to kind of attack some of those, as well as I'm also, because it's getting so crazy, I'm also trying to attack the whole myths about, you know, cows and climate change and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So just trying to dispel some of the myths that are out there.
We love that. Yeah. I mean, I recently read an article that Maria wrote about carbs, and I thought it was very well written. I thought it was great. Yeah, I thought it was really good. I don't know if you guys tag team on those sometimes, but
definitely almost everything we put out now.
Yeah,
is a tag team in some way, you know, or at least, you know, we read over each other's work to check things.
Oh yeah,
do it here and there. But yeah, I did chunks of that, and you know, again, that's another one where you know, if you're a top athlete, there might be some role for, you know, targeting carbs before a workout, or like Zach Bitter, he's the world record holder in a 100-mile race. You know, he's going to add some carbs, you know, every hour be adding a you know, small amount of carbs, but majority he runs, you know, up to 2 to 3 hours fasted, he could run just fine if he wanted to. And, you know, there's just kind of myth out there about, you know, you need carbs for certain situations, or you need carbs for hormones. And in reality, it's a lot of time you're addressing the wrong problem. Like, for instance, let's say you're fatigued and you're having heavy legs and this, and you add carbs. Well, guess what? Carbs retain water. So when you eat the carbs, you're addressing the problem, which was dehydration, indirectly. And so you're not really addressing the problem at its core, which is up your electrolytes. So there's kind of these, you know, you see the results. Oh, they helped. Well, if you just upped your electrolytes, you'd really fix the core of the problem.
I love that. And that's so true.
I it's interesting because I recently, actually Mike Mutzel, Metabolic Mike, he put out a something that we recorded all the way back in December, and it took a long time because the audio and video quality wasn't good because of the person who was recording us. Mm-hmm. But like I it was interesting for me to see, you know, what I was saying in December versus what I'm saying now. And I thought it would be much different, and it's not, you know, and I've personally, you know how it is, like when you have influence, you have to really be careful, especially because a lot of people who follow you are not anything like you. And a lot of people come to this from a broken metabolism and all that. And I was happy to see that even back then I was qualifying everything. And it's frustrating for me because I do so much work to even answer questions and comments and all those things. And most of the time I'm telling people, you know, someone says, oh, do you think carbs will help me for my runs? And I'm like, well, have you even looked into like zone 2 training, or like, you know, training in a way that's not always begging your body for sugar, you know, things like that. But for the majority of people, I totally agree. It's not anything that's necessary at all. For me, that I had a period here in the summer where I was adding these carbs, but now I'm going to go back into a period, especially this, you know, this next 4 months or so, where I'm going to be back on carnivore. I'm even experiencing some of the early symptoms that I had back in 2017 when I started carnivore, where I have like, oh man, I pulled out the fiber and now I'm having issues again, but I kind of know what to expect. But absolutely, I totally agree. And I think, I just love just seeing all the views, and then it's hard to get people to think, you know, that's the one of my biggest challenges.
Yeah. Thinking differently. And, you know, we always try to address this as, you know, first with any client or anybody we talk to, it's what are your goals? I mean, if you're running that race and you ask about adding carbs, are you planning on breaking a world record? Are you planning on, you know, running for more than 2 or 3 hours? Okay, maybe there's some appropriate fueling that needs to happen there. But, you know, the 99.999% of people that are just trying to lose weight, there's really no need for them.
Especially, people are doing 5Ks, 10Ks, things that are like,
yes, exactly.
You know, when under ask an us hour.
Stuff like that, we're like, no.
I mean,
fasted, easy.
All right. Well, I'm glad we talked about that. I didn't even plan on talking about that, but I'm glad we did. But we know that you guys have been, you know, low carb and keto for a long time, and you've suffered from some health issues. Lyme disease being chief among them. But it seems like this last 1.5 years or so, you've eaten a carnivorous diet and you've seen the best results. So can you explain kind of how all of this developed and what have been your main takeaways, like comparing, for instance, keto to carnivore?
Yeah. So, you know, I'd say about almost 7 years ago now, I started having some back pain, soreness, stiffness. And, you know, at first I put it off as related to an old high school football injury. I have a damaged disc in my lower back and it would sometimes slip and you get the shooting pain in your legs. And, you know, I put it off as something related to that. And so I let it go for a long time. And, you know, over the years, over about 5-6 years, it just slowly got worse. It moved up my back into my neck and just got progressively worse and worse. And it got to the point where, you know, I couldn't throw a football as far as my 7-year-old son could. And I knew there's something just fundamentally wrong here. This can't be back to that same injury. Yeah. So I went in and got a standard. I thought this seems like a lot like Lyme disease, the symptoms, the pain. Wow. And so I went in and got a standard Western blot Lyme test, which everybody gets, and it came back negative. And so I went another year not knowing what the heck this was. And finally, I went to a functional doctor and said, let's just run a bunch of tests and see what is going on in my body. And so we ran a bunch of blood tests. And one of them was CRP, C-reactive protein. So that's an inflammation marker.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get clients all the time with a keto diet, with the lifestyle we formulate for them, below 2, usually, you know, dipping below 1 for inflammation, very low inflammation. I had been eating that way for, you know, upwards of 10 years at that point, and my inflammation was 50.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so I said, okay, yeah, there's really something going on here. And we were lucky to have a connection with our publisher who had been through, had spent massive amounts of money figuring out his own health. And he said, I think you do have Lyme. The standard Western blot Lyme test is false negative like 60-70% of the time. So it says you don't have it, but you really do. And it's really tragic because if you catch Lyme disease early enough, it's pretty easy to treat. And when it gets chronic is when it really becomes a problem. And your immune system from all the inflammation over the years gets depressed and, you know, things start creeping in that normally your body can handle, like mold, high toxicity, right. You know, heavy metals, all this stuff. And it just breaks you down. And so he recommended this Igenix test, which is much better at diagnosing Lyme. It tests all the bands and all the co-infections that can come with. And I was positive on that. So that was about 1.5 years ago. I tried everything that you're supposed to try. I was on, you know, all these tinctures and herbal treatments and, you know, getting ozone and vitamin C IVs and, you know, three very high powered antibiotics all taken simultaneously for 9 months.
Wow.
And, you know, all of these things did almost nothing for me.
Yeah.
And so about 1.5 years ago, I started shifting because there's people in the carnivore community who originally got into carnivore, like Charlene Anderson,
right.
years ago because of Lyme. And so I started shifting to very much a carnivore lifestyle. You know, I was pretty close already. You know, I had, you know, maybe some tomato sauce or onions with a burger, that kind of thing. I just went straight to, you know, start eating a lot of ribeyes and sticking. what we, in our carnivore book that's coming out, we would call level one, which is just beef and salt. Yeah. And I started, I had this, with Lyme, you also get this migrating pain. So like one morning you wake up and your knee feels like it was sprained. And the next morning your ankle and the next morning your hip, it's just migrating.
Wow.
And it makes life really a struggle because you can't, it's hard to exercise. It's hard to move, which, you know, makes things worse too.
Yeah.
But as soon as I started doing the more carnivore, that migrating pain went away completely. And I haven't had it since. And I feel my best when I'm eating carnivore. Of all the things I've tried, the only things that have helped me improve have been carnivore, as well as doing some infrared sauna type treatments that have also helped. So it's been a long journey, but I'm slowly clawing back now.
Man, that's awesome. We are also huge proponents of sauna, infrared sauna. We have one, and we also have a Juve light therapy. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious because, you know, you're so educated, and so is Maria. So, like, I'm wondering, I guess it just took for you to find the right person, but what kind of, you know, that's intimidating to some healthcare providers for you to walk in and be so educated. How was that? Did you have any issues with your treatment and all that?
Well, so what I did is the functional doctor I went to, she was a friend, and I was just like, here's the test I want to run. And she's like, all right, let's see what comes back. And she was really cooperative with that. She wasn't Lyme literate, as they say, in any
right.
really. And so once I got that diagnosis, I actually ended up going to a doctor in California, San Francisco, that is worked under Dr. Klinghart, who was one of the top Lyme docs in the country, and started working remotely with her. And so she was helpful. But again, the thing with Lyme is it's so individual. You get this immune system state that just lets all these problems in. So every case, it's like an onion. You got to peel back problem by problem, and everybody's different. And, you know, something that works for one person won't work for the next person. And it's becoming more of a problem. I mean, Lyme disease is, they estimate almost 500,000 cases a year.
Wow.
New cases of Lyme disease every year.
Wow.
And it's just getting worse. And so this problem with diagnosing it properly and then with, you know, proper treatment is just, it's becoming a big issue.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a crazy story about the Lyme thing. How do you, I'm just really curious, is it the tick? Like, is that how everyone contracts Lyme? Is it from a tick?
Used to be, but there's been more and more cases recently. If you can kind of Google and find things, but, where there might be some crossover happening in other insects. There's some people that have claimed they've gotten it from mosquito bites. There's one woman that we met actually at KetoCon. She got Lyme twice, the first time from a tick, and the second time from a ladybug.
Wow.
It was on her arm. It bit her, and then she got the bullseye and got the test done, and she was positive. Like, she saw it happen. So it's getting to be bigger and bigger of an issue for sure.
Wow. That's so interesting. Okay. Well, I think everyone in this conversation is on the same page regarding protein and fat ratios. We personally do much better with a higher protein approach as far as body composition and performance are concerned. But what are your thoughts on the whole protein and fat debate? Is there an approach that seems to work better for the majority of people, or does it kind of still default back to bio-individuality?
I think for the most part, it's more goal-based.
The
thing is, I listened to that podcast with Paul Saladino and Ted Neiman.
Protein versus the fat. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, and to kind of, I thought it, what I heard from it was they're kind of talking about slightly different goals. You know, Paul was talking about performance and these kind of things. And you know, Ted was more talking about, you know, he deals with the very, very sick, metabolically damaged people. And he's talking about getting them to lose weight as fast as they can so they can reverse their insulin resistance and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
You know, that's what I looked at it as, is they're kind of talking about slightly different goals. And when we approach it, that's the way we approach it as well, is, you know, if your goal is reverse insulin resistance and, you know, that originates in your fat cells. And so you need, the number one thing you want to do as quickly as possible is reverse that by losing body fat. And the best way to do that is get adequate amount of protein, keep carbs to a minimum, and dial fat down a bit when you're able to allow your body to burn the fat off your body instead of using this, what's coming in the diet.
Right.
And so that works really well in that case for the majority of people we see, which is that kind of situation where they're, you know, trying to reverse their health and lose weight.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I got to say, I got to give him a shout out because, you know, about a year and a half ago, we had him on the Ketogenic Athlete podcast and he was talking about, you know, you know how he doesn't mince words. And, you know, he's like, I see these people coming in and they're following a high fat ketogenic diet and they have terrible numbers. Their blood sugar's out of control. Their insulin is still high. And, you know, I cut their fat and they improved their insulin sensitivity. And I personally, like I had that in mind. And just a few months after that, I had taken on a new client who was doing keto for a year. And she had gotten her A1C down to like 5.2 or lower. And she was feeling awesome. She had lost some weight initially. A year later, she found herself drifting back up, you know, in her A1C and she was gaining weight again. And all I did was cut back on fat and it was like magic. So that was really cool to see because I think a lot of people, for one reason or another, they get married to one form of eating or one form of doing keto. And then they deny themselves of other tools that they could be using.
Definitely. And, you know, in that perspective, what are you typically sacrificing if you up your fat? You're going to probably be lowering your protein, right?
Yes.
And so what happens in that situation if over time, I mean, when you're talking about insulin resistance and metabolic syndrome, you really, there's two main things you can do. And one is lose body fat. The other one is gain muscle. And those two things together are really like the knockout punch for insulin resistance. And if you're not getting enough protein, you're probably going to lose some lean mass, which shifts body composition in the wrong direction, which over time can start tipping you back towards that, you know, metabolically damaged state, where if you get enough protein, you're going to maintain or even grow your muscle mass while losing some of the body fat. And then, you know, your metabolic state from, you know, insulin to, you know, insulin resistance, fasting insulin levels are all going to improve. And so that's what we try to focus on. And I love, you know, back to Dr. Ted, he's got that before after picture of his, which I've shared with many, many clients.
Yeah, the vegan.
Not moving. You know, he's exactly the same weight in his before after, and his body composition is just insane in the before after. So it's not all about what the scale says. It's more about what's going on with body composition.
Absolutely.
So important. And I love that he also talks a lot about exercise. It's so important. People, they get into these groups and everyone's, you know, kind of supporting each other, but no one's talking about exercise. I had recently done a live with someone who has a pretty big Facebook group, and she was asking me all about carnivore, and I was prepared to talk about it. But then she was saying that she was stuck, and I just asked her bluntly. I was like, right off the bat, I'm like, are you exercising? And she's like, no, I'm not. And I'm like, you're holding like one, possibly two hands behind your back if you're not exercising.
I mean, diet, I think, is number one to get right.
For sure.
But exercise is number two. I mean, you gotta keep moving to maintain that lean mat. You don't use muscles, they're going to atrophy no matter how much protein you're eating.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about stuff that we're probably all more excited to talk about. And that's, you know, we talked about how we're like-minded and your whole family is on the same page with nutrition, and your boys have eaten the same as you and Maria since they were 1 and 2 years old.
Yep.
So like, this is basically all they know. And one of the things that we encounter with our kids sometimes is other children and people possibly reacting to the way they eat. So have they ever told you like about anything, you know, you guys are with them more since you're unschoolers, but like, have you ever seen them get pushback or be treated a certain way by other children, by the way they eat? And how do you guys address that?
Not really yet. I'm sure there'll be some of that at some point. Again, being homeschooled is a big buffer to that.
For sure.
Yep.
But they go to camp and they do stuff like that, and we always pack a lunch with them. But you know, I think it's what is more shocking to me is that the fact that we feed our kids whole foods is somehow some drastic thing these days.
Yeah, how people look at it.
Like, we're so extreme. Yeah. Goodness.
Meat and vegetables. Like, why is that some extreme thing, you know, that, you know, you got to have kid foods and you got to have these Lunchables and all this crap that is kid food. And yet I'm cooking them healthy whole foods. And which, by the way, the most nutrient dense thing you can eat pretty much is animal protein.
Yep. So
I'm feeding them the most vitamin, especially when you talk about bioavailability.
Most
nutrient dense foods they can eat, and they even get liver. We make like this chili, where we mix in, you know, at the hamburger we mix in some ground liver, and
yes,
you know, they're so getting good. Just loads of nutrients, and they're thriving. You know, we started this, like I said, we brought them home from Ethiopia when they were one and 2 years old. And Kai started out with, we were blessed to have somebody pump for us. So he actually had breast milk for a while.
Awesome.
And then we supplemented that with some homemade bone broth. And then the really thick stuff, you know, we'd add the marrow and everything in there when it would cook out.
Oh, yeah.
And then we would start and just feeding them what we ate, but we would just puree it. You know, you can take beef and you can puree it into a paste and, you know, whether it's just, you know, a steak or hamburger, and he loved it. And he ate what we ate. We just adjusted it or pureed it so that he could eat it himself. But I mean, I don't know why that's so radical.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm with you. I don't find it to be radical at all. And it's also kind of strange to expect them, you know, why have them eat junk food and then all of a sudden like have to get their crap together when they're 18, you know, and they leave the house, Mike, all of a sudden they have to learn healthy habits. Like, why not teach them now? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Mike Mutzel posted about that. I thought that was really on point. It's like, you're going to feed them all this crap. And then when they turn 18, they suddenly say, okay, I want to eat healthy now. Like,
no,
it doesn't make any sense. You know, you got to educate them all the way along. And people ask us about that with our kids is, do they know, or they understand? They know more about food than probably most adults. And I think that's important. They need to understand what's in their food. What, you know, you see some of these documentaries or whatever, where their kids, they show them vegetables. They don't even know what they are.
Oh,
you know, they can't describe what certain vegetables are. They've never seen a potato not in French fry form.
Right.
and yet, you know, our boys, they know probably more than just about anybody, because we educate them. We talk to them about what's in their food, what that food does to them and to their bodies and metabolism. So it's about educating them and empowering them to also understand why these are better choices.
Absolutely. We agree. It's also something I've realized is that the younger the child, the easier, if anything, because I feel like babies are very, like babies, you can give any baby meat and they'll love it. You know, like my niece, she just turned 2 years old, and she, you know, we were like, oh, let's see if she'll like this liver burger. You know, I'm like, I bet she's going to love it. She ate it. No problem. Like they have a taste for that because that's what the body needs. And it's like natural for them. So it's just so funny how people think it's crazy.
Well, and I think it's really important too, especially at a very young age, to develop their palate outside of that sweet flavor, right?
Oh, and yeah.
Our boys, you know, didn't even have much of that. You know, birthdays, you would make them a little keto cake or something. But
yeah,
you know, a lot of times they didn't want it. You know, they had such a developed palate and for that savory kind of flavor. We started making Kai's, because he wouldn't really eat the cake, we would make him a meat cake. So it was basically a little meat loaf with some, you know, avocado on it for frosting and a
that's great. Top.
Oh, I love that.
He loved it, and he would devour it.
Yeah, that's so true. A lot of parents, they seem to be scared for some reason of the idea of their children eating a low carb diet for some reason. And maybe it's the terminology, honestly. Maybe we need to change that. We find in both our personal experience as well as what we hear from other parents that the children rarely skip a beat. So it's just like so much easier to transition them, in my opinion. But it's the parents who have the biggest issue, really. What would you say to someone who's hesitant to, you know, to get his or her family on the same page?
You know, we just, we start by hitting home the health factor. You know, why put them down the path that led to your
right.
you know, metabolic issues? You know, why even start them on that path? You know, obviously, again, earlier the better. We have parents that are real hesitant, and you know, they maybe have like a 4 and 5 year old or something, and like, well, do they go shopping? Because
well,
you know, if you don't have that
do.
Stuff in the house, you know, they don't have a lot of choices. They got to eat what
exactly.
they're making. And so it's, that helps with transitioning as well. But I think some of it is, like you said, perception, like keto is just this thing you do to lose weight.
Yes.
And that's what we've been pushing in our presentations, and Marie and I both at Low Carb USA and some of these places are posting these testimonies about health, not about weight loss, and some of the health improvements and changes we see with clients, just to hit home the fact that this isn't just about weight loss. This is about a lot more.
Yeah.
That's so important, man. And I think it's when they look at it through that lens, whether you're doing it for your child or you're doing it for yourself, Mauda's talked about this for years. This is why paleo worked so well for us, because we were focused on health. It was the first time that we were like, this is not to go on a diet. This is just...
Yeah, because if it's just for a matter of losing weight, technically you could probably eat a cheeseburger from McDonald's. I mean, I'm not going to lose weight.
Yeah, there's lots of ways to lose weight.
One researcher, whatever he was, that ate nothing but Twinkies and only ate 500 calories worth of Twinkies a day.
Of course.
And he lost weight, but
you could lose weight a lot starving. Of right.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're starving yourself of nutrients.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's another thing. Like I just reminded me when you said the nutrient thing is that like with this higher fat approach is that you're also diluting your nutrients, you know, because you're not getting anything. It's great to absorb the nutrients, but it doesn't have anything in it beyond fat.
Right.
Yeah. You know, we're actually doing another post on that. We did one a while back, but I'm doing another nutrient density post, kind of talking about Bulletproof Coffee and that kind of stuff, because I was on a summit recently, and I won't name names, but I was listening to a couple of the other interviews and I just got frustrated. You know, they talk about, they were talking about Bulletproof Coffee and how it's loaded with nutrients. And I'm like, what? Loaded with energy.
It's
not loaded with vitamins and minerals. I mean, you can do you can look it up on Chronometer and crunch the numbers, and it's night and day compared to, you know, bacon and eggs or a piece of steak. I mean, it's not even close. And especially when you start talking about MCT oil, it literally has zero vitamins and minerals.
Yep. It's what were you going to say?
This is just liquid fat energy. I mean, that's all it is.
And it's really fast acting energy too. That like, what are your needs? You know, there was something about that. You just reminded me of something. And I was just like, oh yeah. Yeah. Imagine like so many people they're doing, you know, intermittent fasting or extended fasting, and they're pumping their body full of caffeine, like several coffees a day with fat in them. And I'm like, I can't imagine what your body is in a serious state of emergency. Like fasting on its own is not that big of a stressor, but when you add things that are going to ramp up catecholamines and, you know, it doesn't make sense to me either, man.
No. And we've had those clients that have 2 or even 3 Bulletproof coffees a day, and it's just nothing but calorie. I mean, the Bulletproof Coffee can be 400 or 500 calories.
Yeah.
You give 3 of those, that's like 1500 calories right there just in a drink, and you got no nutrients with it. It's just, you're going to not eat enough protein that day. You're going to have, you know, your body composition is going to be shifting the wrong direction. It's just bad, bad recipe.
I agree, man. I agree. One of the things that I wanted to see if you had, cause we're always trying to add to our knowledge base, like, mm-hmm. found when our youngest or when our oldest, when we basically were like, okay, how are we going to feed this child? And we were like, of course, paleo back at the time before we went keto. We found this book, Eat Like a Dinosaur, and it was awesome. One of the things that we took away was like this whole aspect of having them involved in the cooking and the preparation. And that seemed to help with compliance. And of course we also have Fathead Kids and Buddies in My Belly. All of these things, they teach our kids about metabolism, ancestral eating, even probiotics. But I wanted to know, have you guys found any related resources that have helped you or that you would recommend to someone who's trying to not only learn about this themselves, but also in a way that they can share with their children?
Well, Maria actually did a kid's cookbook a while back that,
We haven't seen that one. That's awesome.
It's mostly, I mean, there's some tidbits of information in there, but it's mostly like these kid friendly kind of recipes. Like, you know, especially if you're transitioning a kid, you know, you got like these chicken tenders kind of things and
yeah.
You know, things that look like the food you're replacing, but just in a healthy version. So that can help with transitioning. But I don't know if we haven't, with our boys, it's mainly been what you talked about with educating them ourselves, as well as getting them involved in the cooking and preparing and understanding what goes into their food.
Love it.
I love it. Well, let's dig into a topic that we really are excited about, because we were so excited to learn that you and Maria and the boys are also unschoolers like us, which is so awesome for us to find that out. Maria, when she asked us, she was like, wait, do you guys do unschooling on the cruise? I was like, yes. How do you even know what that is? Like, I'm surprised. If someone knows what it is, then they know, you know?
Yeah.
So we've definitely, become closer friends because of that. And when we found out, how did you guys arrive at this decision though? And what does unschooling look like for the Emmerichs on a day-to-day basis? Because it could be real different depending on the family.
I think a lot of it depends on age too.
Yeah.
Early on, there's not a huge difference in school environments. I mean, you're teaching them the basics. You're getting teaching them how to read, write, spell, you know, basic stuff to get a foundation to build on, right? And basic math. And then from there, you start evolving. This is what we've done as they get those basic tools in place, you start evolving and going down paths that interest them. Like one of our sons, Kai, is very artistic. And so we've been supporting that with getting these, learning how to draw cartoons and those kind of books that
awesome.
He really likes. And then Micah's really into science and math. It's just comes super easy for him. He just turned 10 and he's doing, doing algebra and
that's awesome.
Fractions and all these like fifth and sixth grade level math stuff that he's doing. I think the reason we came to the decision to do it this way is, you know, we looked at our own lives and, you know, looked at what our educational path looked like and, you know, even in electrical engineering, the first 2 years of electrical engineering, they called the weed out years. It was all of these really hard classes to kind of weed out who's really wants to stick with this kind of thing, right? Yeah. It's all calculus and physics and all this stuff. And I ended up, I got through it. You know, a lot of people did. I think it's like a 40 or 50% of people that start in electrical engineering at the U of Minnesota didn't get past this first 2 years.
Wow.
Switch majors. For me and what I ended up going down with what I liked with some of the programming and things that I got into, I didn't use any of that.
Yeah.
Calculus, the advanced math that I learned, which I've unlearned since, cause I haven't used it since, but it was, it just didn't serve me a lot in where I ended up. Right. And I think there's a lot to be said about having well-rounded and understanding when it comes to things like certain aspects of history and civics and all of those kind of things. And we will, be doing those things as well, but their core path, it's about what makes them happy, what interests them and what they want to do.
Yeah. I love that. Our friend Anna, she was a big influence on on us, and she had this libertarian homeschooler Facebook page where she just shared all this stuff. And then when we became friends with her, and she started to tell us, about how things look and how we look at it. And what we do also is like we spend 80% of our time in that sweet spot doing what they love, because it's not only, obviously it's motivating for them, but you want your child to love learning and keep that curiosity. And I think the best way to kill that is by spending a bunch of time doing stuff they don't want to do.
Right.
Exactly. And, if if they're going to be an artist and that's the path that they're going to take because they love it, you know, do they have to do advanced math? I mean,
right, exactly.
He can balance his checkbook and do all the basic, you know, math he needs. That's all he needs. You know, you support what they want to do and what they're interested in.
Yeah, that's so important. And then, like,
that's such a huge, like, question that most people have too. Like, when they don't understand homeschooling, they're always like, well, what about math? But it's like, well, how much math do you remember or use, you know, yeah. like in your job? Because yeah. I took calculus and all those classes, but since I don't use any of it, I mean, you could test me right now, I'll probably fail.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, you know, Micah likes it. So we'll probably right. go down that path of some pretty advanced math and all of these kind of things if that's right. what he wants to do.
Right. Cause he likes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think something that people lose also, and they it's hard for them to wrap their head around because, for instance, like historically, you've seen probably a lot of people that the reason why they're homeschooling is because their child has some sort of social issue or maybe like an ADHD or like some sort of spectrum disorder. And yeah. so you start to think to yourself, like, homeschool kids are weird. And it's not, they're not weird because they're homeschooled. They're homeschooled because they're weird and, or they're different or the school system doesn't have a way.
Well, they only cater to like one type of learner.
Types, yeah. yeah. And so like this social aspect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to say, and the social aspect of public school, I think has as much negative as there is positive.
Absolutely.
Our boys yeah. are, first of all, some of the most social kids there are.
Exactly.
And yet, they don't want to get the constant bullying and picking on and all the things they would very much likely get at least to some extent in school.
Yes.
Absolutely. And that's one of my favorite arguments too, because at this point it's become one of the reasons I homeschool. So when people ask me, I always like to say, oh, for socialization purposes, because I know that they always ask me, well, what about socialization? And it's just funny because that's one of the biggest compliments that I'll get sometimes with Desmond is like how social he is. And yeah. one, I think it's your personality. Like school did not, you know, I tend to be more introverted and stuff. Well, school didn't make me more extroverted. I was still myself. Yeah. But if anything, you know, our kids, they're getting their social cues, you know, from us, you know, your boys are mm-hmm. getting them from you, Maria, and then everyone else they're interacting with on a daily basis. So they see the different behaviors on like the different ranges of ages instead of just getting their social cues from their peers, which is, in my opinion, not
they don't know
the
crap.
Best. Yeah. yeah.
Well, and again, yeah. you don't have the negatives. I mean, how many kids right. are socially damaged because of right. public school, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because of bullying and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That's one thing I've noticed. They don't really like the forming like cliques and stuff. That doesn't.
Yeah.
That's not something that we see yeah. with our homeschooling community.
And it's interesting too that like when they play with kids who are schooled, a lot of the time they see that click. That clicky behavior
yeah, they
sometimes,
don't
and they're like,
it.
They're like, yeah. I don't get it. You know, it's unfortunate, but like at least they're aware of it. Like, yeah. look, this is just a symptom of their environment.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. We actually had in Hawaii last year. We had, or actually, it was 2 years ago. There was a boy that was playing with our boys, and then this other boy showed up, and it was a kind of a click thing. Him and his, right. those boys went off and did their thing, and they didn't want to play with our boys anymore. And like, no. why is he doing?
Yeah, like they don't even understand. Like, why can't we all play?
Can't understand.
Or why do they want to play with me anymore?
And oh,
so we kind of had to, you know, explain that kind of the clicky aspect of things that can happen.
Yeah.
I'm just going to add an observation that, like, if I wish kids ate better too, because I see this look in a lot of these kids' faces. They have like this constant. They're in a constant state of reactivity and emergency, and everything is, they're so hyper reactive. And I know it's because they're on
with
this,
their blue mouths, like their blue candy mouths.
Yeah.
Every
like
time I see it, I'm like, oh my
candy,
gosh.
Yeah. And yeah. they're on this roller coaster all the time. And I'm like, man, if kids ate better, they'd be nicer to my kids.
I think they'd actually be nicer. They probably
would. Oh, there's a huge part of that. I mean, we've had so many clients that have kids with ADHD or, even autism yeah. and they see huge improvements when they, yeah. put their kids on this lifestyle. And, you know, one had their kid with autism end up on a whole new level of the autism spectrum just by changing
wow.
diet.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't doubt it.
You understand, you know, autism and the spectrum, but yeah, it's, I think kids can thrive on this too. And there's no reason they shouldn't.
Absolutely.
And I know like, I'm not willing to do this experiment, but I know I'm almost certain that, you know, our child, our youngest, he has sensory processing disorder and possibly some other things that we're probably going to get a diagnosis soon, but I couldn't imagine where he would be.
Oh, if he
did, miserable he would be, how hard it would be for everyone, for all of us, if he didn't eat the way he ate.
Oh, I agree. Our youngest has the same thing where he's got attention issues. And
yeah,
if I know for a fact that he would have full-blown ADHD and all that if he was.
Oh, for sure.
Of course.
Yeah. And we've seen it. Like sometimes they'll, you know, they do, you know, we'll end up at a kid's birthday party and they might have something, especially with the food dyes. I mean, I can see some of these reactions, like I'll lose eye contact. That's sometimes.
Scary, yeah.
Yeah. And it could last days. So
yeah, it's
crazy.
Well, I want to give you a chance just in case, because again, like our path was like, it started like 8 years ago before our oldest was even born on this unschooling thing. Like we were just in the right place at the right time where we were finding good information. Yeah. We read a lot of stuff, Peter Gray. What are some of the other people? Of course,
John Taylor Gatto.
And, another one that I really loved was, John Holt. Yeah. And Murray Rothbard's, Education Free and Compulsory. So it really started to help us understand not only the history of schooling and what the original intentions were, as well as just how learning works and how learning happens. And then you're like, it makes it so much easier for you to
believe. Because it's us. We're the ones. We have to like unschool ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
basically.
That's part of it. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. First, I really heard about unschooling was from an article I read about Elon Musk and how
he
started a charter school, basically an unschooling type charter school.
School
just to have some place to put his kids in because he believed in it so much. And so, yeah, I think when you see somebody like that, who's obviously incredibly intelligent and innovative, that's what made me look into it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's ironic to me sometimes how you start to see, like, if you pay attention, if you pay close enough attention, you start to see, okay, what are these very successful people doing? And, you know, you have people like Bill and Melinda Gates who are like giving millions of dollars to education, but it's for, you know, publicly funded education that may not be able to be customized for the individual. And they don't use that. And even with the other thing that I was just mind blowing was I read an article like last year on how, I think the Gates, I think even, the guy from Dell, some other people, none of them, not only did they not allow their kids to have cell phones and iPads. Like a lot of them didn't let them, they had rules. Like I think it was, what's his name from Apple? Steve Jobs. They didn't let their kids have, I think, an iPhone until they were 18. And the mother said that was too young. Like, yeah, that's crazy.
I'm not really surprised by it, honestly. I think they see intimately what can happen on those platforms. And yeah, I actually was hoping the Apple Watch, you know, I really think that could be a good platform for kids.
Yeah.
New cellular functions, you know, where they can call. I want them to have something that they have on them, you know, when they get older, teenagers.
Right.
They can contact me with either through messaging or call me.
Right.
That would be the perfect platform for it, but you'd have to have a phone with it. But maybe someday they'll make it so.
Yeah. Maybe by the time they're of age, the Apple Watch will be up to date.
I'd get a cell phone for sure.
Yeah, and it's less likely for them to be addicted to the Apple because of that reduced functionality and that small screen.
Yeah, you can't do a lot of the stuff on it that you can on a phone. So
it's true. Well, we want to talk really quick about the awesome cookbook you guys have coming out. Can you tell us a little bit about the Carnivore Cookbook and what you hope people gain from it?
So yeah, we're looking for time because we're pretty busy. We got two books right now that are in editing, and one is a keto air fryer.
I'm excited.
In October, which Maria was really excited about. I have to say, some of the things she cooked in there, I was really surprised how they came out and how well they come out. Even like an omelet that was like,
oh, wow,
just perfectly done. We have that coming in October, and then Marie and I co-wrote a carnivore cookbook. She did all the recipes. I did all the front matter. And that one's going to be kind of it's coming out in, I think, early January, and it's going to be kind of half and half. I really wanted to put a lot of information in the front matter to help people understand why this can be beneficial for them, as well as we define something called the CAIP, the Carnivore Autoimmune Protocol, where it's something that, you know, whether it's Lyme disease, like I used it for, or, you know, autoimmune diseases, chronic pain, fibromyalgia. There's a lot of these situations where people go to keto and they see improvements, but not totally gone. You know, bipolar is another big one.
Yeah.
Where when they go to carnivore, from keto to carnivore, they see it's like a whole new level of improvement, and a lot of times even total remission of symptoms. And so it's kind of a powerful tool for these cases, as well as a good tool for weight loss as well, because you're really getting the adequate protein you need and all that kind of stuff, and focusing on the nutrient dense foods. But I put a lot of information in the front to kind of lay out the case of why this works so well, you know, with the anti-nutrients and plants, and how that can, somebody like me with a depressed immune system, those kind of things can really be irritating. And so when you get rid of those anti-nutrients, you see improvements, as well as our own biology, the way our bodies are designed. And you go back, what I found was really interesting. There's this isotopic analysis of the collagen in these fossils of Neanderthals and early humans. And so they look at the collagen and they look at the nitrogen composition, and they can basically tell how much meat that person ate when they were alive.
Wow. And
types of meat. They can actually tell what types of animals they ate. And it's really striking because the content put them as even higher carnivores than hyenas or wolves or lions of the same period.
Wow.
And so they primarily ate large mammals like woolly mammoths. And there was even a hypothesis in this paper talking about, you know, maybe the human hunting pressure is what, you know, put the woolly mammoth out of it, you know, in extinction. So those large mammals that they ate primarily, and even looking at the stomach acid, you know, our stomach is acid in humans is extremely acidic.
Very acidic.
Mm-hmm. And you even looking at it across the, you know, wide range of animals, like deer, things that are definitely plant eaters, you know, they're probably like 5 or 6 on the pH. Carnivores, like wolves and lions, are more like 2 to 3, and or 3 to 4, and then humans are like 1.5.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And the theory is that when you're eating when you kill a woolly mammoth, I mean, woolly mammoths were massive. That's a ton of meat, right?
Yeah.
And so they ate off of that for a long time. And having an even more acidic stomach than a scavenger
really
means you can handle that meat as it's turning for longer periods, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the kind of evolutionary aspect that we still retain. But again, looking at our design, it makes a lot of sense why this can be so helpful for so many people when it comes to healing.
I love that. And it reminds me, at the carnivore conference, Miki Bendor did a presentation. And I wonder if one of the papers he shared is not the one that is probably the one that you're talking about. The few of the things, like I remember one of the things I took away was someone's Maura's, like her similar build was eating, how much was it? 240 grams of protein a day?
Yeah.
Like 3 pounds of ribeye?
Yeah. 136 pound person. Which is more or less, but
yeah,
that's, I mean, and think about it. We're here. Like I have women telling me their hair is falling out, and then they tell me they're eating 40 grams of protein. And I'm just like, what? 60
or 80 or, I mean, the average American, I think, is 88 grams of protein. It's like a third of what we used to eat.
Yeah.
So, And you mentioned also the other thing was the, like this megafauna, you know, we prioritized them and probably had something to do with, you know, their demise. But even after they were extinct, like that's when we shifted over to like prime animals. And there were people that would inspect the animal. And if it wasn't a prime animal, then unless they were starving, this kind of blew my mind. Like they would reject animals if they were too lean, which I was just like, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Unless they were starving.
Well, you think about that time period as well, is you got to get through a very lean winter.
Yeah. Right.
You may not have a lot of food and you got to put on some body fat to make it through the winter. Right. So
cuts
and, you know,
Absolutely. Well, I'm intrigued, and I like, as comfortable as and as far as you want to go, can you tell us a little bit about this level one? What are the different levels, and what are those? I'm sure each one is kind of, like you said before, goal driven. So what do these different levels stand for? And just explain a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we defined basically four levels, and level one is just beef and salt. So it's all parts of a cow and salt. And it's kind of your ultimate elimination diet, right?
Right.
You cut out all plants, even spices. And you do that for maybe a month or so. And then you start adding things in as your body allows, right? And so the next level is basically any animal, anything from, you know, poultry, pork, seafood, fish, you know, basically any protein, as well as salt. And you can even make some sauces you can't really do spices at level two still. We try to eliminate that as a factor, again, along the elimination lines. But you're sticking to adding in, because different proteins can affect people differently too. There's, you know, definitely people who see kind of a reaction maybe with pork or something. So they kind of feel out the landscape and see what their body reacts to when you have Lyme or these type of situations, and find out what you can eat. And then third level, as you add those in, maybe you want to move to adding in eggs or dairy. And we put that on a separate level because, especially dairy, because it is such a common allergen.
Yeah.
And so when you start adding that in, you want to do one at a time. So you add in some dairy and just see how your body reacts. If you retain water or symptoms come back or those type of things. Or add eggs as well. And level four is kind of more of your almost zero carb, where now you maybe have some spices or some low zero carb type sauces, you know, like mustard or those kind of things you can maybe have at that level. But again, you're kind of walking up the levels based on how your body's reacting and see what you can tolerate. So that's kind of the basis of it.
I love it so much. And it kind of, my initial same thing with me was that, you know, I heard Amber O'Hearn on Keto Evangelist like back in 2017. And I immediately, like a month later, I was like, I got to start this. And in August of 2017, when I started, Brian was like, hey, you know, I really like beef and I really like salmon. So I think I'm going to just eat that for a month. And I did that with him. And then I brought other foods in just like that. And I think it's brilliant, and a lot of people may not know why it's so brilliant. Like for me, the spices would be one of them. For instance, like you have, if someone has gut issues, first of all, Maura and I both had this whole like urgency situation for like a month where, you know, it was probably our colons were so used to having fiber there to absorb so much of this fluid. And of course, then it was going through us and forget about spices. I mean, I used to do some hot sauces. Like
I can't even do spicy stuff anymore, really.
Yeah.
I don't really want it either. I'm fine without it. Yeah.
Yeah. So like these people, like they, as they start to improve their gut, then they can try the, you know, these spices. And I think like the spices are such a big one, because not only because of like the issues with things like nightshades and stuff like that, but also because of, you know, some people, they may have sensitivities, and it's much more likely they're going to have a sensitivity to like a spice or a plant than they are going to have with to just beef. Meat.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, we see so many people that also, even if they don't have some of these chronic issues, like Lyme or bipolar disease or any of these things, see some pretty significant benefits as well. Because problem with the issue for some people with keto is that if you do it more in a trying to replicate non-keto food kind of way, causing more issues, right? Because you know,
yes.
What's you know, oxalates are a big problem for some people,
yes,
including myself. And what's high in oxalates? Well, nuts and seeds are some of the highest.
Yep.
Doing all these almond flour, you know, cakes and cupcakes and all, you're just loading the body with oxalates, which can cause issues. And you be detoxing those as well. When you go carnivore, we see a lot of that where people get, you know, a sty in their eye, or they have, you know, skin that's flaking and peeling. It's these or joint pain. It's these oxalates getting pushed out of the body that they were overloading on prior. So,
wow.
And that's so fascinating to me. Definitely that I see it. Yeah, I see it. I see it a lot. And I'm just like, wow, how fascinating, right? Like all the places that things are hiding in our bodies. And when we finally give our bodies a chance to like detox them, of course, there's going to be a little bit of a shedding period there.
Yeah.
And like you said, the adaption from fiber, you know, we talk in the book too about how you can, you know, add maybe some digestive enzymes and HCL to help digest food a bit better and alleviate some of those issues as well. So, cause you know, the body, it's remarkably good at adapting. But sometimes you can give it a little push and a little help when you're doing these changes. And so some people, if they get diarrhea when they start carnivore, adding digestive enzymes can really help them digest food better as their body adapts.
That's good to know.
Yeah. And
I use them either way. Like if I'm eating out, if I ever eat out, I always take them just in case, but
yeah,
that's good to know though.
So many more people could benefit in general from enzymes. Cause like you have the bile piece, you got the acid piece, and then even obviously the actual enzymes. Like what's wrong with giving your body more enzymes to help,
just to help
break
assist.
Down the food better? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to just say one more thing, because you're talking about like doing keto versions of things. And it reminded me of this awesome tweet by Dr. Michael Eads not that long ago that I was like, yes. It was like a picture of a dude holding like a massive like ice cream cone with like ice cream and cookies all over it. And it said, does anyone know how to make this with cauliflower? with like... That. Yeah, and I was like, this is the problem. This is what we
see. It's true, though. This is even in the groups and stuff. It's like all the endless treats. Like, what are we doing?
And everybody's
here?
Like, good job. You're doing great.
Yeah, you're doing a great job.
Well, not if you're making this every day.
The thing that's crazy about that to me is how far it's come. Like, I remember there's a Little House on the Prairie episode where Christmas time, they each got a penny to go to the general store and buy a piece of candy. Like their one candy for the year.
That's awesome. And,
even on TV, that's so crazy.
That's where it has come from, right? Now it's kids don't go
a day
without getting something sweet. You know, it's just crazy.
It is crazy. That's such a good point. And like, that's funny how it even translates even through our culture, media. Culture and like the TV shows. Yep.
Crazy.
Well, man, this has been awesome, man. I've had so much fun. Just grateful for you to come on. We'll bring Maria on.
We got to bring her on too.
Because we'll talk about this air fryer book because we've been wanting one for a while. Maura has a blockade in place right now because...
No more appliances.
No more
appliances. We don't have space. We need to get rid of some stuff.
It's like, you got to get rid of the sous vide and you got to get rid of your old smoker, because I have another smoker. Traeger gave me a smoker, not that like... 2 years ago, I had my Rectech before. So before I have to get my air fryer.
Make some space.
Yeah, I gotta sell some stuff.
Oh, it's great because we really like it in the summer too, because heating up this little oven is much better than a big oven, right? So you can don't heat the house up as much.
Well, man, where can people find you? And obviously, we know you got the two books coming out. If there's pre-order available, then we'll put them both. But where can people find you online?
Yeah, they're both on pre-order, but we have a blog at mariamindbodyhealth.com. Tons of free information and recipes out there. We have a support website where it's for like subscribers. keto-adapted.com. And then, of course, under Maria or Craig Emmerich on social media and also on Facebook, we have a Keto Adapted page as well as a keto group and a keto carnivore group and even a 30-day ketogenic cleanse group, which is one of our cookbooks that we do.
Oh man, awesome. I'd love it. You're going to have to email me that because I know some people are going to want that support. So we'd love to put it in the show notes. Awesome. And I think there was one more thing that I wanted to, as you were saying that.
The Facebook groups?
I think it was related to Facebook. Oh yeah, I wanted to just tell our listeners that one more thing that about the original Maria Emmerich said, the Maria Mind Body Health. There are some, for those who want to like track macros and want to know where to start, there's some really good macro calculators on there. There aren't many good ones online. So
yeah, take advantage of that one.
Use that one.
Yeah, it's all the way on the bottom in the footer. It just says keto calculator. You can get your macros.
Perfect.
Yep. Well, thank you so much,
man. Thanks so much, Craig.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Our pleasure.
still with you. But I also felt this way when I was still with you. Yes, of course I miss you and I miss you bad. This city's no longer mine. Each lover was made to sign. Now I hear